quite possible that you spend a lot of time every day with your computer. Maybe it's at home and at work. And because of that, having the right computer for your needs can make your time more efficient and certainly a whole lot more enjoyable. Larry Mueller here. Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. And really happy to have back Paul Hedges, was for many years the Information Technology Director at Wisconsin Historical Society. He's now the Emerging Technologies Archivist in the Society's Library and Archives Division, works on digital and audiovisual collections and projects. And Paul, great to see you again.
Thanks. Yeah, it's great to be back.
Great to have you back. Talking with him today about buying the right computer, buying the one that's going to best suit your need. What kind of system are you going to need? He's had a lot of experience, obviously, in this area. So I'm great to have him along. You may have some questions. You know, maybe you're wondering if you need to replace your computer, or you know, maybe you're thinking about software as well. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Paul, what are some indications that we may need to replace our current computer?
Well, the computer is a device that we use every day. One of the first questions is it still meeting your needs? Depending on whether or not you do just basic office and internet browsing, video, photo editing, or if you're a big gamer, you need to see if it's still meeting those needs. The other, I think, is just, is it reliable anymore?
Yeah.
Are you seeing a lot of error messages? Are you having trouble installing your software? Those types of things. Of course, the big thing right now for the Windows world is Windows XP expired a year ago. It's no longer being supported. And so Windows 7 is now kind of the lower end supported OS. And Microsoft is working on Windows 10, which will come out this summer. And then 8.1 is the current one. So there's quite a few versions of Windows to think about. The other is thinking about whether or not your computer is upgradable or not. Some desktop computers would certainly be upgradable, but many laptop computers are not. And that's something to think about as well. But I think the biggest thing really is, does it meet your needs? Is it reliable? I like to think of it as am I comfortable not having a working computer for more than a day or two? And when I don't feel comfortable with that anymore, I start looking around.
Yeah. And you know, even if it seems to be working well, your current computer, is there a point when it's, you know, just too old anyway? So that's what it sounds like you're saying here.
There are certainly certain rules of thumb for that, and to use an old non-technical term, and that is usually desktop computers have a 4 to 6 year general lifespan. Laptop computers a little less because they're less upgradable, usually 3 to 5 years. Now, I say that as a general statement. Certainly, you can take older computers and you can make them last longer as the hardware is working, and you may need to lower your expectations or put a slower programs on it. But typically, with the change of technology, you're looking at for desktops, typically, again, a 5 to 7, 4 to 7 year window, and 3 to 5 for laptops. Then I think, especially with desktops, again, because they're upgradable, there are certain types of upgrades that can maybe lengthen the life of that desktop.
Mm-hmm.
But laptops, because they're so closed systems, they're not really that upgradable.
Paul Hedges, our guest today, Information Technology Director at Wisconsin Historical Society. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Sheila in Portage has a question for you. So let's go to Sheila. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have a small business here in Portage, and currently I have a Hewlett-Packard Pavilion Elite with 1 terabyte of hard drive and 8 gigabyte system memory. It is from 2010, and I have been having some issues with this, and I have some people working on it. I was just wondering what he would suggest I buy next, or if this is upgradable.
So is this a desktop or a laptop?
Desktop.
What kinds of software do you typically use for your business?
I have Sage Peachtree.
Okay.
And we have iSquareFoot, where we take off plans and specs for our business.
So
we have some pretty big programs on here.
Sure, certainly. The specifications of your current computer are definitely still very usable for a Windows 7. I assume this is a Windows machine,
yes.
Not a Linux operating system. So that, do you happen to know what the processor is on that machine? Maybe a Celeron or an i3.
AMD Phenom.
Oh, okay, an AMD processor.
Quad Core processor.
Yeah, great. You could actually, personally, I think with what you're running, you could likely get 1 or 2 more years out of that machine. Of course, making sure that you have proper backups, especially as a business machine, that those backups are to an external hard drive and possibly to the cloud. But making sure that because the machine itself is older, the risk may be a little higher for failure. But once your machine is back up and running, I do think you could certainly get 1 or 2 more years out of that. As far as the next, what to be looking for, certainly if your software supports Windows 8.1, then purchasing a desktop with that capability, you could easily get a desktop, especially if you keep your monitor. You could easily get a desktop in the $600 to $800 range with 8 to 16 gigabytes of RAM memory. Certainly the hard drive about the same size, and HP is a good computer. I'm more of a fan personally from a reliability standpoint of Dell's and Lenovo's and Asus computers. But certainly HP and Toshiba are reputable machines and companies and good machines themselves. Mm-hmm. So I would I think you're not doing anything super heavy on that machine, and you could find something, another HP that would certainly meet your needs. But I don't think there's a rush to go replace that.
Okay.
Good luck. Right.
I appreciate the information.
Sure.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling, Sheila. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show as we talk computer systems with Paul Hedges. And Paul, already there's some conversation has developed between about desktops and laptops, or maybe or laptops. What are some good guidelines for choosing between, say, a desktop versus a laptop?
A lot of that has to do with your need, being honest about do you need portability? Are you going to be sitting at a desk all day? What is your lifestyle, your work? And if you need portability, then go ahead and look for a laptop or even a tablet. Mm-hmm. Again, there are pros and cons to those too. Typically, the trade-offs you have with desktops and laptops are that, as I mentioned earlier, desktops are more upgradable. You can replace the hard drive, you can add more RAM, you could replace the video card. Laptops, depending on the company, are more upgradable than others, but you can pretty much guarantee that you can upgrade your memory for most laptops. The other is just the price for power.
Yeah.
So essentially, you can get a very powerful desktop computer. That same power in a laptop, because of its form factor, its size, is going to cost you much more. If you're a gamer, a gaming computer with the same capabilities in a laptop is going to, the laptop will clearly be at least $1,000 more.
Wow.
For that. But if you are, if you're mobile, if you're always connected to the internet, and you're needing to not run, well, I mean, I'll take that back. I've certainly done video editing on laptops. I've done photo editing on laptops that are fairly powerful, MacBooks, and they can certainly do that work. They have the power for that. But those are $2,000 to $3,000 laptops.
Yeah.
I can do the same on a desktop for about $1,500 to $1,200.
Yeah.
So those are big factors. I think the other is just how much you're willing to spend. I mean, once you've decided on whether or not you need mobility or not, whether or not you're comfortable with a screen size that's 13 or 15 inches or 17 inch, you can certainly get larger monitors with your desktop computers, have multiple monitors with your desktop computers. Considering all of those things, I think, are really important. But typically, it's mobility, cost, power, and upgradability are big factors.
Lots of good things to consider there. Conrad in Middleton has a question for you. Conrad, hi.
Hi. Glad you could take my call.
Sure.
Considering your background, you're talking about conversion of images and all to digital, historical photographs, documents. What's your recommendation for a scanner?
So, it's a great question. It's something definitely we do work with at the Historical Society, as well as I do some personal scanning. The big question really ultimately is, what are the dimensions, the typical dimensions or the size of the items that you're needing to scan? The other is whether or not you will have transparencies, negatives, that you need to scan as well. If all you have are basically flat images within an 8x10 maximum size, you know, photographs or dot page documents or letters or that type of thing, then a standard scanner, flatbed scanner, could certainly do the work you need, and those are priced in the $100 to $110, $120 range.
Yeah.
If you have negatives, if you have transparencies, if you have anything that requires basically shining light through that to capture it, then you'll need to step up to those types of scanners that have transparency.
Capabilities.
And what that is essentially is they put a light into the hood of that flatbed, so the light shines through the through the image or the negative, and so it can capture it. And then those scanners also come with little add-ons where you can put your negatives into a little plastic device and put it on the scanner. And then the software typically will recognize that and say, okay, you have six slides here. I'm going to scan all those slides at the same time. Those typically are going to run you closer to $200 for a decent one. I'm personally a big fan of the Epson scanners. They're all very good quality, and they have a low-end consumer, which is in the $50 range up to thousands of dollars. Mine, personally, I have an Epson Perfection scanner, and that is in the $180 to $230 range. $230.
Will that take 2.25 or 4x5 black and white or transparencies?
Certainly. Now once you have told it, I'm going to do a transparency. it may or may not have a holder for that, but you could certainly place the transparency right on the glass and then preview it, crop a window around it, and scan it directly. And those will have high enough resolutions, typically 9600 DPI or higher, to be able to capture that image at a really good quality.
Yeah,
excellent. That's what I've been looking for.
You're welcome.
That is real helpful.
Thank you very much for calling. You know, to me, as I sit here, I'm thinking, you know, a couple hundred dollars for that kind of capability, I mean, gee, that seems like a pretty good deal to me.
It really can be. Where I get concerned is people will typically go for the lowest end, you know, the 30 or $40 versions. And while they can be capable, they cut corners. They may not have the best scanner mechanisms. They may not do a high enough dots per inch scanning, or they may not come with the really good software. The Epson software does an excellent job of actually capturing the image and saving it. So
yeah, that's really
great.
Really good news. Really good information. Talking with Paul Hedges, who was for many years information technology director at Wisconsin Historical Society, now emerging technologies archivist in the Society's Library and Archives Division. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking a look at computer systems, maybe buying the right computer system to suit your needs, and answering other questions with Paul Hedges of the Wisconsin Historical Society's Emerging Technologies Archivist for the Society. So it's great to have him along. You can join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Certainly love to hear from you. And Joe Endelsman has been waiting, so let's go to Joe. Thanks for waiting. Hi.
Oh, hi. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I have a 10-year-old Dell with an Intel quad core running Vista, and it's time to replace it, I think. The only problem I have is that I've written a few macros in Excel, and they take a lot of horsepower.
So
I'm looking for some advice.
Yeah, so since this is a 10-year-old computer, I can guarantee that any mid-range computer today will likely be 10 to 40 times more powerful than that 10-year-old computer. So I don't think you would need to necessarily jump into a high-end computer to be able to crunch those Excel macros. My guess is it's a time question, that those macros may take a while to run, and so that's part of the power concern that you have.
Yeah, they do, as a matter of fact.
Yeah,
use it for financial purposes.
Okay, so you know, if you certainly you could lean to a higher end, since this is Excel, so you're running Windows. One of the things,
and since I'm running basically Office 2003, I will almost certainly have to upgrade that too.
Certainly. So there are a couple of things to consider. There are typically, I would say today, while there are lower and higher end processors, you're going to be looking for either an i3, an i5, or an i7. Processor when you look for a computer. For you, I would suggest at least an i5, which is kind of the middle of the road powerful processor. It's something that will definitely be able to crunch those macros. i7 will be faster. It has more cores in it, and so it can multi-process better. So go for something with an i5 or an i7. RAM will be important, minimum of 8 gigabytes of RAM, but you could go higher if you'd like, 8 to 16. What you're doing doesn't necessarily require a lot of hard drive space, so you don't necessarily need to go for, you know, the 2 or 3 terabyte, unless you use it also for pictures or video, but if not, you don't need a lot of hard drive space. You're going to today, if you bought a computer today, you would buy either a Windows 7 machine or a Windows 8.1 machine. So consider which of those you want. Windows.
Okay, I have a Windows 8.1 laptop, which I am currently using as part of a users group to test Windows 10.
Oh.
So.
Okay.
So you're already familiar with the.
So you're probably going to stay with the 8.
Yeah, the 8.1 or even Windows 10 maybe when it comes out in this summer. So a question for you. Have you run these macros on the 8.1 laptop?
You can't. The 8.1 won't support
2003.
Office 2003.
Right. Yeah. So that in itself seems to me to be a larger transition question is taking your 2003 Excel files, upgrading them to either what is it, Office 2013 or Office 365, and the impact that may have on your macros, that may be a bigger issue than your speed questions.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. But I, you know, certainly anything in the $800 to $1,200 range. If you're getting a desktop plus a monitor, will certainly meet your needs.
Yeah. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling, Joe. Appreciate it. Will in Milwaukee up next. Hi, Will. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for the program. Given the multitude of security issues that have been in the news lately, I'm wondering if you could start from the bottom up what security services you might recommend starting with. Does it make any difference which internet provider service you use or search engine?
Yes. So from, and again, this is my personal perspective.
Sure.
Here. From an internet provider standpoint, certainly I don't think that a difference between a cable internet provider versus a DSL provider is going to necessarily make much of a difference from a security standpoint. But I'm always uncomfortable with search engines that add ads to my search, and so I personally lean more towards Google. I find Yahoo tends to be a little bit more aggressive with the ads, Bing less so, but. I do think that you can pick Google or Bing, and it feels to me to be safer. Now, I don't have any practical evidence on that, but I think that can make a difference. What I have found, I clean up computers for a lot of my friends. What I find is typically the issue is browsing behavior is usually the biggest factor in people getting malware or other types of viruses on their computer. So maybe Google kind of good browsing behavior and get some tips on that. But I'm very cautious when I browse. I do not personally, and I'm not suggesting this, but I do not personally have anything more than the Microsoft Security Essentials on my computer, and I've never had a virus because I'm cautious when I'm out there. So that can play a large part. But if you're on a Windows machine, definitely if you're looking for something free, the Microsoft Security Essentials, which also installs Windows Defender, is a good start. And whether or not you're a fan of Symantec or McAfee antivirus, or the free versions of various things, those can be problematic. They can slow down your system, etc. But I also feel that if people really want that safety, they should go ahead and install something like that as well.
Do you have any thoughts about DuckDuckGo or Firefox?
I am not familiar with the first one. Firefox is a browser, is a nice browser, but it. I've been concerned recently. I've had some people install Firefox and then immediately start having some problems. Personally, again, I'm a big fan of Chrome, and I'm hopeful that the new Windows 10 browser that will come out this summer will take something similar to Chrome and be kind of a simple, light browser. Firefox is certainly good, and it's better than an older Internet Explorer browser. But could you describe the first one that you mentioned?
DuckDuckGo has no ads, and they don't track what you do on the Internet.
Okay, so it's like an anonymizer type of... So is it a search engine?
Yes.
Okay. I'm not familiar with it, but certainly if they do what they say they do, and they can prevent people from basically getting to bad sites that are going to infect your computer, then I'd say go for it.
Mm. There you go. You when you talk about being cautious, do you have some tips? You know, how do you be cautious?
Yeah, it's a really great question. One of the things to remember is that when you do a Google or a Bing or a Yahoo search, is that for them to make money, they are putting certain types of ad or ad-supported sites at the top of search results now or somewhere around there. Personally, I never, if it says ad, I just don't click on it. And the reason for that is that anybody can buy that space. And so it's not vetted. Typically what is happening is they only remove those when somebody says there's a problem. They're not vetting it beforehand. So staying away from clicking on those ads are really, I find, is just good, safe behavior. The other is that, again, you'll see things that may float to the top of search results that there are people who out there who just do a great job of making sure that their website shows up at the top. They may sound legitimate, but I always look at the actual address, the web address. If to me it's not a reputable company, I will look for the reputable company. Mm-hmm. So if I type Amazon.com, for example, in, I might actually see search results that are floating at the top that are not Amazon.com, but have been able to float to the top.
Yeah.
I look for the official. So it's just being careful things to do.
Really,
it's just being careful.
Yeah. Well, you can join in too, by the way, at 1-800-642-1234. Talking with Paul Hedges today about getting the right computer and computer system to suit your needs. Maybe you're looking at a new laptop, or maybe you're wondering about software. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. Linda in Green Bay up next with a question. Hi, Linda.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I am going to be looking for a laptop. I've had a desktop all of my life, or at least since they've been out, and have just wanted to learn more things about the laptops and how to use it, how to best use it, what to look for. I do want to use Word documents and Outlook. So I know I don't want anything. Although I have an iPhone, I don't want an Apple computer.
Okay.
So need advice.
So can you, beyond doing Office type of programs like Word or Excel or that type of thing, Outlook, do you have any other things you would like to do on that laptop?
Probably, I Not a lot, but just probably pictures. That's all.
Okay. And when you say pictures, you mean putting those pictures from your camera onto the laptop, being able to maybe do some minor editing and create a library or put them, create certain types of things you can print or upload to certain online services?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And minimally, too, as far as the editing.
Sure. Just basic cleanup.
Maybe just like Photoshop or, you know, just the basic program.
Okay. So there's certainly a new type of laptop that's out. It's been out for a little while, and it keeps growing. Are the Chromebooks or the internet laptops? That would be a little bit maybe at the lower end, and most of those, so certainly the Chromebooks would not be, they require really you to be on the internet. They don't have much storage. They are not going to allow you to install Photoshop, so you'll want to move up a little bit from that.
Okay.
Definitely, since you're okay with Windows, then a mid-range laptop would certainly meet your needs. I would suggest going with a laptop that is at least an i3 or an i5 processor. I'll let you write that down.
I am, thank you.
And 8 gigabytes of RAM. And you don't need a super large hard drive as long as you buy a external hard drive that you can connect to the laptop. So think of it as your laptop hard drive needs to just have enough for you to put some pictures on it, but I would not consider that your full personal library, because you're not going to be able to get a super large hard drive on that laptop. You'll need to buy an external hard drive to connect to the USB connector to copy your pictures off at some point. So other than that, Windows 8.1, one of the considerations you may want to think about is 8.1 supports a touch screen, and so certain laptops will come with a touch screen that you can then interact with Windows 8.1 with. Those cost a little bit more than the non-touch screen versions, so that's one of the questions to ask yourself, is whether or not that's important to you.
And I have thought about that. I don't like the touch screen, so I would prefer to either add on or buy one with a regular keyboard.
Sure. So the laptop will automatically, of course, it'll come with your screen and your keyboard there. Are you thinking that your laptop will be your main computer at home?
Yeah, I currently have a desktop, but I'm going to be moving and kind of working more mobile and commuting a lot. So.
Mm-hmm.
I do want to make this my main computer.
So a couple of things I would say, you don't need to do this right away, but a couple of things to consider is that if you kind of ergonomically, if you want a better setup with your laptop to be able to use it at your desk, is you could consider taking your existing keyboard that's probably USB, you could plug that into your laptop. You could take your existing monitor, your desktop computer monitor, plug that into your laptop cautiously. Now, it's something to consider there is that most laptops now are transitioning to a different video output, so you may need to buy a little adapter, but otherwise, you could do that so that your laptop sits a little bit off to the left. You're looking at your desktop screen using your keyboard and mouse. Like a desktop, your laptop is just sitting there essentially as the power, as the actual computer. And then you disconnect all of those and take your laptop when you're traveling. That would be one way to do it.
Yeah, good way.
Wow, well, thank you. So now in the capacity, again, you said it would be a good 8 gigabytes for RAM.
Certainly 8 gigabytes to start. If you want, that'll make it easier to both view the pictures and run some basic photo editing on those pictures as well.
What would be the difference in price from 8 to 16?
Exactly. I was just going to ask that.
That's a great question. You know, I'm going to say, and again, it depends on what other bells and whistles the laptop comes, but you could typically see maybe a $100 price difference or less between an 8 and 16 gigabyte RAM. Most of the vendors, of course, create these packaged laptops, and what they'll do is say, well, if somebody wants 16 gig of RAM, they probably want a larger hard drive and a better video card. So they will ramp up the quality of other but it's really, really key to do your homework, to check a lot of websites, to go into stores and look at them, and then look around for best prices and go from there.
Yep. There you go. Good luck, Linda.
Thanks.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Paul Hedges, our guest today from the Wisconsin Historical Society. I'm Larry Mueller. Cheyenne Lentz, our on-air producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mueller, by the way, talking with Paul Hedges today. He is the Emerging Technologies Archivist in the Wisconsin Historical Society, Library and Archives Division. So it's great to have him along as we talk about computers, computer systems, getting the right one for you to suit your needs. You can join in at 800-642-1234. You can email talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. We'd certainly love to hear from you. John in Green Bay with a question next. Hi, John.
Thank you. I've been watching television shows that I miss, watch them on the computer, and I have a laptop, and that's kind of a small screen. I'm wondering if you could describe to me what I could do to wirelessly transmit what I see on the computer onto the TV screen.
Thank you for saying wirelessly, because that adds to the complexity quite significantly. What I would say right now is that wirelessly from your laptop to the computer would certainly require a variety of pieces of software or specialized hardware, and would not be the first way I would suggest that you connect it to your TV. For example, I'll just walk through that scenario. One possible way would be for you to make your laptop essentially broadcasting on your at-home wireless, and then using something like a Chromecast or Fire Stick or even maybe an Apple TV to be able to broadcast, to be able to pull that video off of your laptop. There's a service called Plex, P-L-E-X, that lets you do that, but the quality is not going to be as good as if you directly connected your laptop directly to your TV. So
you're still recommending connecting through wires?
So I would recommend connecting through wires if you have that capability. Depending on the output on the laptop, do you know, is it a VGA or an HDMI connection?
I don't think my computer has either.
Oh, okay. That certainly is a factor, isn't it? So the laptop itself does not have a video out on the sides of it?
It has a couple of USB ports.
Okay. That's an interesting question. And I'm not sure there may be some specialized pieces of equipment out there that could take USB and broadcast that to the TV, but I'm admitting that you're kind of stumping me at the moment.
Yeah.
Well, so yeah, I the I will admit that I think my workaround for this would be, so what are you using to actually view your movies on your laptop?
It's an older MacBook.
Okay. And are you using, like, Netflix or something like that, or?
No, just going to, like, the ABC or CBS websites. Mm-hmm. They have full episodes of favorite shows.
Okay. So then I would suggest actually looking, while there's some cost here, there's a big cost no matter what, would be to look at the Amazon Fire Stick, the Roku, the Apple ITV, the Chromecast. They all will connect directly to your TV. They will connect to your wireless, in-house wireless, and be able to stream from various websites, video. That may give you basically certainly a better quality, but may be a faster way to actually get that result.
Mm, yeah.
Those sound like good options.
All right. Thanks a lot, John. And we had Facebook from Brett. As a Dell desktop purchased in 2010, I've since upgraded, and it's just taking up space. Are there organizations I could donate it to, and how do I scrub the hard drive before getting rid of it so somebody can't get personal information from it?
Yeah, it's a great question. I would depend. There may be some local companies or local nonprofits that will take that computer. There are some technical programs that you can install to actually wipe hard drives. Myself, I actually remove the hard drive and donate it without the hard drive, mostly just because I don't want to take the time to get the hard drive wiped. As far as organizations go, I'm not as familiar with them. I would myself do an internet search and see if there's, again, any local companies that can help with that. And if you can find a local reputable company, they may even facilitate getting your hard drive wiped.
Yeah.
But that's... Yep. I tend to wear mine out and then send mm-hmm. them to the recycle shops.
Jackie in Milwaukee. Hi, thanks for calling.
Yes, quick question. Truck driver, I have an HP, and my problem with the laptops on my that I take with me on the truck is they tend to break. The DVD drives break, the hard drives, the power cord hookups. And right now I'm looking towards my laptop. The power cord is starting to go, the hookups into the computer. So what would be the most durable laptop I could be looking at for taking with me on the truck?
Great. That's a great question. So I take it you tend to beat them up a little bit, which I could totally understand. So there are a couple
of... Just the truck itself has a lot of vibration.
Of course, certainly, yeah. Yes. So I think there are a couple of things to consider. One would be to make sure that when it's not in use, it's someplace... an appropriate case or that type of thing can help, but I don't think that that's going to solve all your trouble. While the cost will be higher, I don't know the specific brands, but I do know that there are major laptop creators that create what they call ruggedized versions, mm-hmm. or basically ones that they guarantee if you drop them like 3 feet, they're not going to break. They are a bit stockier. They can handle the vibrations. They're encased maybe in some kind of padded or firmer casing. And essentially do a Google search for that. And
what are they called again there?
Rugged, usually ruggedized. So
okay.
Rugged. I'm at ruggedized.
Z-E-D,
yeah. Ruggedized. I know that there are some out there, and they tend to be maybe sold to either a it might be a military market, or it might be an mm-hmm. active activity market, or even a trucking market. So I would suggest maybe looking for those. You're going to pay a little higher for that, but certainly if you're not paying for repairs or replacements yeah. as frequently, that's something to consider.
And just the aggravation.
Right. The other is, again, maybe if it's typically happening because if it's getting damaged just through vibration and through sitting in the truck while the truck is moving and sliding around, would be to look for some kind of foam hard case that the laptop can sit in so that it is actually better suspended and the vibration is reduced. That could mitigate maybe mm-hmm. some of the issues there.
Yep.
And could be less expensive.
Yep. There you go, Jackie. Good luck. Thanks for calling. Patrick in Denmark up next. Hi, Patrick.
Hi. I have a fairly new, it's about 2 months old, HP desktop with Windows 4-core accelerated processor, 4G DDR system memory, 500 gig hard drive. It was Windows 8.1, and I found that this is a desktop. I bought it because I have a fax machine and I do some side work. But I found when I go to do my social media or, marketable websites like Amazon or eBay or even Home Depot, that it freezes up a lot. The 8.1 doesn't seem to be very interface compatible with these websites.
Hmm.
I was wondering if there's anything I can do before Windows 10 comes out, because I heard they're going to give it free for a year to fix that problem, that there's been a lot of complaints about 8.1 in this.
So it's really a great question. I use 8.1. I actually upgraded my computer from Windows 7 to 8.1 about 3 months ago. And one of the first things I did is I just installed Google Chrome on it as my main browser, primarily. So one of the, I think the questions is whether or not you're using Internet Explorer or some other browsers. Do you know what browser you're using?
Well, I have Internet Explorer, but Google is my homepage.
Okay. And so when you go to, let's say, Facebook or some other website, and you say it freezes, could you describe that a little bit more?
Well, I can give you a Facebook example. Specifically, I get on there, and it takes sometimes up to 5-6 minutes just to download the Facebook homepage. And if I type anything into any response of, like, how I'm doing for the day or comment on somebody else's, it'll take 3-4 minutes just to type one sentence.
Goodness, yes. So, and what kind of Internet provider or access do you have?
It's supposed to be a broadband DSL type, so okay. Cable provider.
Okay. Yep. So I'm going to guess that there is something going on that is kind of taking over your browser, that it's possible that there is some, something going on, some program that's running at the same time when your browser loads up. And so I would suggest maybe opening once, is doing some experiments, going to different kinds of websites, seeing if some websites are faster than others, or if it's always the browser when you're on the web is slow, then clearly that's not normal behavior. And since the computer is pretty new, is it possible to get some repair, or is it still under any kind of warranty?
Yeah. Actually, I had one just like it. I ended up taking it back to the store because it was even worse than this one.
Wow.
I did do some adjustments in the tool program for mm-hmm. settings and stuff, mm-hmm. and then it came free with a 30-day trial for the McAfee security system. That's expired. I thought maybe that might be the problem, and I was listening to you earlier when you were talking about the Windows security programs,
mm-hmm.
and I've never been much for these buyout ones. I agree with you on that the ones that are offered for free are just as good and stuff. Because
yeah.
I'm like you. I'm very careful
yeah.
when I open
So I always like to kind of go back to the bare bones and then systematically work forward. So definitely if you're cautious out there when you're browsing, I'd suggest uninstalling any kind of antivirus software you have. Uninstall any of the what is commonly called bloatware, which when you buy a computer these days, they'll install a lot of extra programs on there. Going through and just, if you don't recognize it, you've never used it, just go ahead and uninstall. Look at your task manager and see what kind of programs are actually running when you're having the problem, and do a variety of testing. One thing I'm curious about is, do you see any slowdown in any of the other programs you use?
There's not a lot of, I haven't really played on it as much as I'd like to. I did download, I was disappointed there wasn't a Microsoft Word program on the factory software, so I did download a 30-day to that. Mm-hmm. That was a little difficult at times, but because prior to this, my operating systems were Windows 7.
You know, we're going to think about that. Paul's going to ponder that a bit. We need to take a quick look at the news, weather, find out what else is in store for us. And then we will be back with Paul Hedges and some answers. You stay with us. Great to have you listening in on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, taking a look at your computer and your computer system with Paul Hedges. Paul is the Emerging Technologies Archivist in the Historical Society's Library and Archives Division at the Wisconsin Historical Society. Great to have him along, and thank you so much for listening in. Questions, join us at 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. And Ralph in Ocado has a question for you. Paul,
yeah,
let's go.
Hello.
Hi, Ralph.
How you doing?
Good. What's on your mind?
I am looking to purchase a new computer system, and I'm interested in video editing. And I'm wondering, I've always used Macs. They seem to be pretty good with pushing pixels around. And I'm just wondering what the best platform for, not necessarily professional quality, but more than just the standard software that comes with the computer. So the combo, you know, what's the best combo for that? Windows and something, or Mac and something, or what?
The combo part of your question I find interesting. So part of what you're looking for is wanting to be able to use the software that's provided with the laptop, not purchase.
Well, not necessarily. Okay. No, not necessarily. Okay. There's usually some kind of dumbed down video mm-hmm. editing software provided with each of those systems. But what I'm asking is, what's the next step up from that? And what's the best combination of hardware and software?
Yeah, certainly. So the MacBook Pros definitely come with a higher quality onboard video that will allow for good video editing. I have worked with a MacBook Pro. Actually, it's now 4 years old. I've run Premiere Pro, Adobe's Premiere Pro on it, and been able to do perfectly good video editing. It takes without any stutters, without any problems. It takes longer to render that video because the processor and the hard drive may not be as fast as certain desktops, but realistically, definitely a MacBook Pro will have the capabilities to run a professional video editing suite.
Is that the best system then, or is there something equivalent or better on the Windows side?
Well, certainly the good news is that depending on the software, of course, Premiere Pro does work on Windows just as well, and you can get laptops with higher Windows laptops that have a higher quality video card. I think really, ultimately, that is going to be a key part of that, is from a performance standpoint, is to have plenty of RAM So a laptop with at least 16 gigabytes of RAM, a decent processor, ideally an i7 processor. The MacBook Pros, you can get up to an i7 processor. A fast hard drive. There are two speeds of hard drives, the 5400 and a 72. The faster hard drive is always better for video. But the video card is really important because you want a video card that is a faster speed video card, but also comes with some onboard, what they call onboard RAM. Those are key kinds of questions when you look at the laptop specifications. So if you see a MacBook Pro, do a one-to-one comparison with excuse me, like a Dell XPS or a Lenovo, and do a one-to-one comparison, and you'll get the same, pretty much the same quality out of it. Now, many of the Windows laptops, I don't think have really met the Retina Pro quality screens yet that are on the Mac. And so that might be a consideration, certainly for video. But I think if you compare the two one-to-one, you'll get definitely comparable quality and experience, you know, with those mm-hmm. two. And then price the two. Look at the price between the two and say, you know, which one do you actually want to go with? The other thing, of course, is make sure that you have a USB 3 outputs on that laptop, because you'll need a lot of external hard drive storage space. With a fast enough connection, a USB 3, you can actually edit video that is on the external hard drive. You don't have to put it on the hard drive of the laptop itself.
There you go. Good luck, Ralph.
Great, thank you. Sure.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. And sort of along with that, in a way, Don in Spring Green wonders if I have advice for someone looking to buy a new laptop, choosing between the Microsoft Surface Pro 3 versus the MacBook Air.
Yeah, really interesting question in that, the Surface Pro is really meant as a Windows tablet. The Surface Pros are running Windows 8.1 and are, in many cases, full-blown laptop computers, but in a tablet format. They tend to have more capabilities as far as connectivity than the MacBook Air. But I think in the end, it really depends between the two: is are you a Mac person or a Windows person,
yeah.
and what software you use. If you're looking for an internet-only connected device, the MacBook, and you don't care if it's Windows or Mac, the MacBook Air is certainly it's lighter, it's got a beautiful screen, and will give you that Mac experience. The Surface Pro 3, and I think they're going to announce a Surface Pro 4 sometime later this summer, is going to give you the full Windows experience. You'll be able to install Windows software on there and be able to do a whole lot of stuff with that. You can connect a mouse to it, it doesn't have to just be touch. I think it really comes down to what do you want to run. Do you want to run Windows or Mac, and what software do you use on a daily basis?
We have a Facebook question, and this is an interesting one from Christine. We have a photo up on our Facebook page that she provided. It says, our system is not a year old, and the monitor is fritzing out, as seen in the attached photo, which certainly is a fritzing out is a good way to put it. Computer service people can't determine what's wrong. Do you have any ideas?
You know, I've seen this before. It's essentially, if you're not seeing the picture, it exhibits, it's looking at the screen, and then there are bars of purple, it's like kind of columns, and then in those columns are various lines of purple. It it looks to me that this is a sync problem. That's S-Y-N-C, sync. And what I would start to do to troubleshoot this would be to rule out whether or not it's the monitor or the cable or the computer itself. So would be to maybe plug into another computer, into a different monitor, see if the monitor looks fine. If the monitor exhibits the same issue, then it's either the cable or the computer, a video card itself. Take the cable, connect it to a different TV, a different computer and monitor that you know works. And if the cable, so essentially it's breaking down and troubleshooting the issue. But if it's none of those things, and if it's, was this a laptop? I guess it doesn't say.
Doesn't say.
Well, it says monitor. So if it is a desktop, then would be to, if it's onboard video, would be to maybe buy a low-cost video card. If you know it's definitely the video card, would be to try a different video card in the computer and see if that solves the problem. Then the fourth thing to check would be making sure that the drivers, the video drivers, are all updated and that its settings are okay. But boy, that is certainly an unusable screen.
Yes, it certainly is. Yeah. Gail in Lake Mills, thanks for calling. Hi.
Hi. I have a question about a tablet. My husband is going to be retiring in a few weeks, and we would like to go on the road. Right now we have a Dell desktop, and I think I'm kind of like to stick with that kind of format, and I'm wondering if they can recommend some type of tablet for us.
Certainly. So with tablets, again, you'll need to consider kind of what you're hoping to do and what's out there. From a tablet standpoint, of course, we have the iPads or the iOS devices. We have the Android tablets. And now with the Surface, the Microsoft Surface tablets, you have a Windows operating system. So beyond that, then the question is connectivity. Are you okay with sticking with access to the internet when you have wireless available while you're traveling, or do you want to be able to download while you're in the car, which would require a data service through a company like AT&T or Verizon, etc.?
Yeah, I think it would be really nice to be able to have the connectivity.
So because the connectivity becomes an issue, each of those service providers require you to essentially buy the device from them, and that's not 100% always, but typically if you have a Verizon or a US Cellular or AT&T, is you would go to their website and you would buy the tablet from them, and then it would come to you already set up and part of your account. So then it becomes, again, then the question of, do you want to do iOS or Android or Windows? From a user perspective, iOS has been around longer, and it's certainly a lot of people love the iPad, and that can work. The question then becomes, if you're browsing, if you're on the road, what do you need to be able to access, and is it going to work with iOS? Android is less mature, but is still very usable. A lot of people are very happy with their Android tablets. But what I would suggest is maybe just getting into a store and checking them out, and then making a list of the things you want to do while you're on the road. If it's taking pictures and posting it to Facebook, then they'll all be fine
for
that.
Fine.
But you may have some extra things that you'd like to do that might even lead you to a Microsoft Surface type of device, so that you're running Windows and can still run through your cell service.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So go directly to the phone service, which I wouldn't have even known about. So I'm so glad I called. Thank you so much.
Oh, you're welcome.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And it just makes it a little simpler.
It does, but also each of the carriers require different kinds of things on those tablet devices to work with their service. So you cannot, for example, if you cannot take an iPad with a cell data service that you bought through Verizon and take it to AT&T, they will not hook it up to their system. There are some unique parts to that, so you do have to start often with the provider.
Let's turn to Linda in Randolph next. Hi, Linda. Thank you for calling.
Okay, I'm looking for a new Apple book. And I read a few months ago on the technology part of Flipboard that Apple was changing their system, and they were also changing iPhoto to something. Has that happened?
So the operating system, OS X, mm-hmm. did definitely update just recently. My MacBook Pro did get an update, and I have not looked into this, so I don't know all the details, but they did replace iPhoto with something else. It didn't go away. It's essentially mm-hmm. evolved into a different type of photo package that's built mm-hmm. in.
Well, I'm replacing a PC with... what was that old one called that's no good anymore?
The Windows XP?
No, yeah. Oh. So that won't matter to me about any of the Apple things transferring or anything.
Okay.
But I was just wondering if this change has happened or if I need to wait a few more months before I buy one.
No, so, you know, that's a really great question because I think that that so much has changed now with operating systems, especially with the Mac computers. Apple now provides OS upgrades for free. So this recent change of the iPhoto, for example, was not something I had to pay for to do the upgrade. Mm-hmm. It essentially, my MacBook said, hey, you have an upgrade to this new version of OS X. And then I said yes, and it downloaded and installed. So I don't think there's a need to necessarily wait. You'll buy a MacBook laptop or a desktop, and you will get the most latest, greatest version of that OS on that machine. 3 months later, they may come out with a major upgrade. It will just, as long as you're connected to the internet, it will say, hey, you have a new upgrade, and you'll be able to download and install mm-hmm. it. You can, of course, say no, but it doesn't require changing your hardware. It will just replace what's...
Well, I didn't save it or print it out, but I read something that said it was going to be such a major change that it wasn't one of these things where if you had an older Mac system, which we do, that you could, like, jump up to it or whatever.
That is always a factor. So yeah. So what they will say is certain upgrades may require you to have a processor or a certain mm-hmm. age of a computer, and that is certainly mm-hmm. always a factor. In those cases, it just would not let you download and install that.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And you, as long as your laptop was still operational, you're good.
Right.
You just would not be running the latest, greatest version.
Right. Now, is there any laptop available that does not make me store everything in iCloud that I could store photos and Word documents, you know, processing things on my new iBook?
So here's my suggestion for that. I am not a fan of iCloud. I just did not sign up for it.
Mm-hmm.
So when you don't sign up for it, your files are still sitting on your hard drive.
Okay.
So if you're not using iCloud, those files will sit in your documents and pictures folder on your MacBook.
Mm-hmm.
It's still, of course, important that to not lose those, that you buy an external hard drive or some other way to back up that hard drive so that...
Right, I have one of those already.
But you're not... required to use iCloud, and I hear this all the time. People get really either confused or frustrated or simply angry about how iCloud operates. You can just simply turn it off and say, don't use it for my pictures or don't use it for my documents, and
okay.
they'll just stay right on your your Mac?
Now, right now I have a lot of things on Picasa.
Mm-hmm.
Does that work on iMac, or is that only...
So Picasa is, of course, it's in the internet and it's in the cloud, mm-hmm. but you can also, I believe, Picasa will run on the MacBook. You should be able to run it fine, and it would just read the pictures that are sitting right on the hard drive of the MacBook.
Yeah, not that I want to, but I was just wondering if I'd be better off to just stay with their photo program and forget about it, you know.
Sure. And if you're comfortable with it and you know it works, then there's certainly mm-hmm. no need to change. It's a very capable program.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the Bamboo Pad, does that still come with like a Photoshop or a Photo Elements or something?
I'm not familiar with the Bamboo Pad.
I don't know what that is either.
That's a little pad for like artists and things.
Oh. Yeah.
The Wacom
sure,
pad.
Sure, a way to draw and for art.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not familiar with how that operates with the software, but certainly if you've got a MacBook and you have some kind of art software like Illustrator or Photoshop, it mm-hmm. should work. But then, of course, you'll need to buy those programs.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now I listened to you about 20 minutes ago. So the one I should probably be looking for is that professional one that you were talking to the other gentleman about?
You mean as far as laptop goes?
Yeah.
Yes, if you're going to stick with a Mac, then you know the MacBook Pro will definitely meet your needs, even the lower end. If you're going to go with a Windows machine, again, the Dell XPS or some of the mid-range or higher-end Lenovo machines are very good. What I would do is look at the MacBook Pro and then compare the innards with a Lenovo or a Dell or an Asus machine and then decide Mac or Windows.
Thanks a lot for calling, Linda. Appreciate it. You know, time maybe for a quick comment from Jeanette. Has a question about her HP scanner. We were able to use it with our Windows HP. Now we have Windows 7. How do we make it compatible?
So, yeah, it's an interesting question. So one of the nice things about Windows 7 was that is how good it was with being able to plug things in and they just worked. So it is a little surprising, we don't know if it's working or not. But here's what I would do. So with that new Windows 7 machine, go to the HP website. Actually, I guess, it's an HP scanner. Go to the HP website, look up for the drivers for that, and then download the new software, and then plug in the scanner, and you should be compatible.
Well, Paul, you have done a marvelous job today. Thank you so much. I hope, look forward to your next visit. I hope you'll come back.
Oh, yes, thanks.
Paul Hedges.
Always a blast.
Oh, he's done a great job. Emerging Technologies Archivist in the Historical Society's Library and Archives Division. He'll be back, and we'll do it again. Tomorrow, we'll talk with the author of Homemade with Honey and also John Ivanko's new book out on Homemade for Sale, How to Set Up and Market a Food Business for Your Home Kitchen. Stay with us.